Hi everyone, my name is Darren Griffith and you're very welcome to the 19th episode of the Lusk Athletic Club podcast. We hope you're all enjoying the brighter mornings and the stretch in the evenings, which is great for training, no doubt. We've had great feedback on our last episode with David Gillick and Claire Davis. If you haven't heard the episode, do check it out. A big thanks to you all also for liking, sharing, following and subscribing to the podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, these are the simple steps you can take to help us make our Athletics Club Focus podcast a continued success. Remember, you can contact us at our new email address, luskacpodcast@gmail.com. Moving on to this episode, we're really delighted to have sports journalist Eno Reardon on as a guest. We also have an interview with our new ladies track and field captain, Emma Shumashinska. So next up, we have my interview with Ian. So hi all, we're delighted to have Eno Reardon join us as a guest on our podcast. Ian is a very highly regarded sports journalist and the Irish Times athletics correspondent. So Ian, you're very welcome and thanks again for agreeing to talk to us.
Thanks Darren, good to be here. Thank you, thanks for having me.
Great. And given the news today about the Dublin City Marathon route more or less staying the same, I was thinking it might be nice to kick off with your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, this, I don't know, probably some people are probably aware that there was some discussions around whether the start or finish area would be kept. Well, the start obviously in Fitzwilliam Square and then the finish on Merrion Square. Apparently some people in Dublin City Council weren't too impressed by some of the traffic disruptions on a bank holiday weekends. Not quite sure the reason behind that. But yeah, I mean, in fairness to Jim Ockney, the long-serving Dublin Marathon race director, I think he was very both keen and I suppose just eager to keep the race start more or less where it was. So what they've essentially done is they've moved the start around the corner to Leeson Street, which will actually work better for the runners because it gives them a straight run up towards Stephen's Green after that first mile or so. And then when they come back in towards town, back down the famous long road down Merrion Road and into Mount Street, it'll be a quick turn to the left and then you're going to go turn right back onto Mount Street, which is just more or less adjacent to Merrion Square. So essentially the same course. And from chatting to Jim today, he thinks it will actually suit the runners better. It'll certainly keep Dublin City Council happy as well. And who knows, might even please a few of the motorists also.
Yeah, yeah. Well, certainly the runners are happy anyway. I think everyone's quite relieved. There's been no dramatic changes. So I think it was a welcome announcement. So thanks for your thoughts on that. So really, I'm going to talk about Ian the runner, Ian the sports journalist, and we're going to finish with some chat about the upcoming Olympics, which is a very exciting prospect. But I mean, obviously, it's well known that your dad, Tom, was a famous Olympian and no doubt a fantastic role model for you and countless others. But could you maybe take us back to how you and when you got involved with athletics personally?
Yeah, as I say, we were very lucky to have grown up. My father and I ran in the Olympics in 1964 in the 5,000 metres and would have been quite, I suppose, the fact that he was an athletics journalist as well. So he was very much involved in the sport. But funny enough, like, I mean, I've said this many points before, like it wasn't something we were kind of made particularly aware of. Like my dad was an incredibly modest man. He didn't have any of his trophies or medals or any of that stuff sort of displayed around the house. So it's not like we were sort of from a very early age, we're sort of like conscious of that. And in fact, if anything, quite the opposite. I think my mother especially was quite keen to ensure that we weren't sort of particularly forced into athletics in any way. We didn't have to sort of watch athletics or anything like that. And I had an older brother who was, like most older brothers, quite influential on me. And we were probably not very much involved in athletics at all. We were kind of into our BMX bikes and skateboarding and all that kind of stuff. And then he got into running, first of all, before me, probably at the age of maybe 12 or 13. But again, there was no pressure at all put on by my dad. I mean, in fact, as I say, it was quite the opposite. He was very keen for us to enjoy as many different sports as we could. But I think certainly for me, when I was around 13 or 14, I quickly realized, well, number one, I wasn't very good at many team sports. And then it was just thanks to my dad, I suppose, one day we just went for a run around Belfield when Belfield was a bit more green and open space like that. And I think I just really enjoyed it. I actually did, purely in my own terms, enjoy the freedom of it and enjoyed the escape from suburban lifestyle. But it was still, it wasn't a very competitive thing at all until I was probably around 15 or 16 when my brother was getting more competitive. Then I joined, I would have joined Dundrum, South Dublin Athletic Club. And then only around 16, 17 that I kind of started training for specific events on the track, 1500 meters especially. And then a little bit of success my last year in school, the Irish schools, 1500 meters. And then on the back of that, went to college in America and then ran for 4 years in college in America. Again, had some reasonable success over there, but I think most people know when you go to America, like it's kind of make or break. A very few succeeds after college in America, even though you can be quite successful within that 4 year period. So I suppose it was only when I came back from America then after a few years after that, that I suppose running became less competitive thing for me. But I do still run purely for pleasure, but certainly my competitive days are long since behind me.
Yeah, that's brilliant. There's a lot to be said for a young person chasing an older sibling. That certainly can drive people on, but that's super. And you mentioned Brown University there. I mean, it's very interesting. It's an Ivy League university, very famous and very old. I mean, what was it like studying and training stateside when you went? Must have been a
Yes,
great
well,
experience.
again, like, well, Brown University is in Providence in Rhode Island, so it's quite close to Providence College, where a lot of Irish athletes would have gone, like Mark Carroll and was over there during my time as well. And there was quite a good Irish contingent at Brown University as well. There was a famous sprinter called Susan Smith who went on to run the Olympics in the hurdles. Good friend of
Waterford
mine,
lady, yeah.
Donal O'Sullivan, who still lives out there. So there was a good Irish contingent, or the Irish Brigade, or whatever you call it. So of course that always helps. You're not going in to see one of these sort of, dare I say, Midwest colleges where you're a little bit more isolated. So there was a very strong Irish community that definitely helped. And there was just a very nice training environment. There wasn't much pressure because you're there, kind of, as you say, it's an Ivy League school. So there wasn't the same amount of pressure to succeed as it might be in an Arkansas or even a Providence to some extent, or Villanova. You were kind of you had a little bit more freedom to focus on your studies, which helped. But no, I mean, I really enjoyed it. We qualified for the NCAA cross country. I think it was my junior year, which it was only
Dad.
the second time in the college's history. So that was a big deal just to qualify for the
Yeah.
NCAAs. I think we finished 13th in the nation, which was still the highest placing in the history of the university. I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing, but I really enjoyed it. And like most things in life, you kind of look. It's only when you look back in it now and you realize, wow, what a great opportunity that it was. Just to travel across America to race at the highest level. I mean, as I would race against Mark Carroll, who else was that year? People like Bob Kennedy and some of the top American distance runners. Sonia Sullivan wasn't too far ahead of me. She was a few years ahead of me, so I would have seen her compete as well. So it was kind of the glory days, really, for the Irish in college in America. Like, it's not quite like that now. Well, we have obviously Rashida Adeleke in the sprints, but back then, I think the year I ran NCAA cross country, I think of the top 20, certainly the top 10 of those were Irish. The likes of Mark Carroll, Niall
Amazing.
Bruton, Conor Holtz. There was a really strong Irish contingent back then. So different times now, whereas now you look at the NCAAs, it's very much American driven, which is probably the way it should be. But certainly the 4 years I was there, the Irish presence was really strong.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And do you like to see young Irish athletes go stateside at the moment? Do you think it's important they do, or?
Yeah, well, of course, that's the age-old question. That was a question that was asked, what is it, 30 years now while I was over there. Should you stay or should you go? And I mean, the only answer, I think it's a common answer now, is like, there's pros and cons, and you have to weigh up the pros and cons and decide what's best for you. I don't think there's a right decision and a wrong decision in terms of the university speaking, but I definitely think there were certainly advantages. As I say, just for me, being able to compete at that level was huge. Being able to train in a group, being able to travel, all the pros, getting an education out of it as well. I suppose the negative side is, yes, of course, you're away from home. You probably, does it always be an increased risk of injury, homesickness, illness, whatever, just by the very fact that you're away from home. But to answer your question, yeah, I mean, there's still pros and cons, but my advice would be for a young athlete, 16, 17, to look at all the possibilities in America. And if you think there's an option right for you, then yeah, to go for it.
Fantastic. And I think you majored in biology, is that correct? Or
Yeah, well, again, at different periods, Aaron, trust me. Yeah, we all have ambitions at that age, but I think, well, it's different. Different, di sorry, different in America, because you declare your major and you satisfy a certain number of credits towards that course. So it wasn't like 100% science towards the end. But I think by the time I graduated, even though I managed to graduate in biology, I kind of realized it wasn't going to be my career path. Something about the sight of blood and that did kind of put me off. So unfortunately, I never went on to medical school, which was the plan. but no regrets about that either.
Okay, brilliant. Well, certainly not. You have a very successful journalism career, which we'll get on to. And then I suppose you came back to Ireland. So was I suppose when roughly and why did you decide to maybe take a step back from competitive athletics?
Yeah, so I would have graduated in 94. So there was about 2 years there where I was still more largely based in America. And you mentioned the Olympics then, and it was kind of coming up to 96 Olympics in Atlanta. And that was still kind of not maybe not so much on the radar for me, but you obviously you had Sonia, you had Mark Carroll, you had I'm trying to think who else from that period. I think obviously Noel Bruton, Cormac Finnessy, these are a lot of runners, Irish runners aiming towards Atlanta in 96. So I think that was still in the back of my mind somewhere that if I could qualify for the Olympics. But again, I quickly realized that wasn't going to happen. So it was around that period then after 96 that I came back to Ireland. Again, not entirely sure what I was going to do. I mean, I was still running relatively, still training at a high level, and came back to Dublin here and did a lot of running with Noel Berkeley at the time in Dundrum, who was one of our top runners at the time. So I was still training hard, but I think that's when I realized I have to start thinking about a career path here. And again, through no pressure of my father, and it was almost some a replay of when I was younger. Like, he didn't push me into journalism, but he kind of just maybe pointed me in that direction and said, look, maybe there's an option for you here. You like the sport, you like to write, you like to travel, there could be opportunities here. And it was, again, thanks to his gentle advice and gentle sort of encouragement that I decided to do a bit of freelance journalism across all different sports, not just athletics. I was, trust me, covering League of Ireland soccer and schools rugby and all the great stuff that you do at that stage. And then I took a year and went to DCU. I did a master's in journalism in DCU in that would have been 97, 98 term. And on the back of that year, which was my first real exposure, I suppose, to the how journalism works in terms of the whole processes and the sort of politics of journalism and the legalities of journalism and all of that. But on the back of that year in DCU, I got a work placement in the Irish Times for that summer of 1998. And I'm still here. They have promised to start paying me a bunch at some point, but other than that, it's still the same contract.
And was it key to do that master's? Was that a key stepping stone to really securing a good position like you did at the Irish Times?
Well, not so much even to good position, but just to kind of give yourself a bit more clarity about what's involved and what maybe the commitment that maybe is involved and just the experience of being around other journalists and that. So from that point of view, absolutely, yeah. I think, I mean, most people get into journalism through lots of different ways, but I think if you look at the, say for example, from that class that I was in 30 odd years ago, a lot of them are still working in journalism. I've gone on to different things in television and radio. So I think it really is a good introduction like that. I wouldn't say it's essential. It was certainly helpful for me. And again, just gave me a little bit more clarity and maybe even confidence to decide, right, let's see, can I make a career out of this? But again, I mean, luck played a huge role. Luck played a massive role because, as I say, when I finished that summer of 1998, turned out to be Sonia Sullivan's maybe one of her best years. She won the double world cross country. She came out and won the double in the European Championships in Budapest, which was my first championships to cover, I think. So you had a lot of Irish success. That was the same year the Tour de France came to Ireland, and there was a
Yeah, I
famous
remember well.
Festina doping scandal. And I'd actually done one of my theses on doping in sports, right? I had a good idea about what EPO was and what blood doping was, whereas a lot of people didn't really know much about that then. So
Had a head start.
I was lucky to be able to sort of have some sort of experience or qualification in talking about that. And as I say, it was a good time for Irish athletics. You had obviously Catriona McKiernan was on the scene as well. We had probably two of the top female distance runners in the world, and that was the same year Catriona went on. Sorry, the following year, then she would have won London and Amsterdam. So it was a good time to sort of see that athletics could present some opportunities in journalism as well.
Great, great. Look, I mean, as I said earlier, we're all big fans of the articles in the Irish Times, and like, there's a fantastic variety of topics. Like, I mean, say covering from cross country, athlete profiles, super shoes, and even recently, you had an article on the condition of the Mardyke track in Cork. But I mean, what's your general approach to covering athletic events and athletes? How do you pick your stories, or what are you looking for?
Well, thanks for the compliment. Always know people are reading the articles, trust me, because it's not always easy to get them in the paper when especially if it's a rugby newspaper that you're working for. But no, I'm just kidding. I mean, I think two things. Like, number one, I've always maintained that there's great interest in athletics in this country. I think people understand the sport. I think they appreciate the sport. I think, look, we all have our sort of fantasies about Premiership football and rugby and all of that, and that's all true. But I think athletics really is one of our grassroots sports across the country. So I think that's the first thing to say, that people do genuinely appreciate athletics. I would never underestimate people's interest or curiosity about the sports. And as I say, we're very lucky to have that huge tradition as well. That it's incredible tradition going
Yeah,
back to my dad's
absolutely.
time and right through to today, where I mean, I'm always asked the question now, is athletics in a better position than it's ever been? And of course it is. Of course it is. Like, we've never had the depth in events. We've never had the facilities that we've had. Now, of course, you mentioned Mardyke just being dug up there, but I mean, to a large extent, the facilities improved, the indoor tracks, coaching, and all of that. So I think the sport's in a good place. So there's always gonna stories and angles out there as well. Of course, it still has its challenges, and I mean, the funding issue is always raised around whether more money should be pointed down the road of coaching, or whether they could actually improve just the basic athlete funding compared to other sports. But I do think the sports is in a really good place, and I think we saw another perfect example of that at the World Championships last year in Budapest, where we had, okay, unfortunately, two fourth place finishes and Rashida and Ciara McGeehan. But to see the depth there again in the relays, and even the fact that a lot of athletes were unlucky, like Sarah Lavin, unlucky not to make a final as well. So it's exciting. It's exciting, I think, to think about where it's going. But at the same time, you know as well that these things don't go on forever. Like, I mean, there's always peaks and troughs. So I can look back over the years. We've had, like, go back to Sonia and Katrina, and then there's a bit of a dip, and then you had maybe the likes of Dervil and David Gillick and Paul Heshin, that does maybe a bit of a dip after that as well. But certainly the sort of the trajectory has been very certainly the best that I can remember of the last 20 years in terms of where it's at and where it's potentially going.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched there on promoting athletics perhaps among wider audiences. But like, what do you think sets apart a really great story from an average one?
Yeah, good
Even if you're reading
question.
it yourself or writing them, whatever works.
Yeah, well, I think we're lucky in the sense that, again, people understand the sport, so especially middle distance running. So I think people still appreciate the sub-4 minute mile, even though you mentioned super shoes and super spikes. I mean, it's not the achievement that it was anymore, but if you're watching a race and somebody's runs a sub-4 minute mile, I think it still clicks something in the head. But no, I think maybe just sometimes. I think there's also an appreciation of what it takes to succeed. I mean, you look at Rashida, well, she's gone down to Texas, one of the top schools in sprinting schools in America, and she's really capitalized on that. You've got Sophie O'Sullivan over in Washington, like the story of how she's, daughter of one of our greatest athletes, and the journey she's on, her own different journey. So I guess it's the journey that I suppose that athletes go on as well. I've always been fascinated by pathways. And we're, again, if you look at someone like Sarah Lavin, I mean, Sarah Lavin is, I think it's okay to say, like, she's almost 30 now. Like, she's not young, but she's had a really difficult decade to get to where she is now. And that's why she keeps saying she's a very young 30-year-old. So the journey she's been on. So the highs and lows, the struggles athletes face, the injuries, the setbacks, how they overcome those setbacks. Ciara McGeehan as well. I mean, look how many times Ciara McGeehan has had to overcome some setback, whether it's injury, and the resilience that she's shown to keep bouncing back. So they're the kind of stories that really appeal to me. It's how, I mean, we all know when people succeed, how people can react to that, and the great celebrations, the front page of the Independent or whatever, or you're on the Late Late Show. But sometimes it's what goes on to get to that stage. They're the kind of stories that certainly I find always find of interest.
Brilliant. And then, I mean, obviously, you get an opportunity, I presume, to travel to many of these fantastic events. Can you maybe tell us about your favorite experience or memory covering an athletics event, please?
Yeah, again, good question. We don't travel as much as we used to for a whole variety of reasons, but certainly, I mean, the Olympic Games is still the pinnacle. I mean, I had this conversation quite regularly about even looking forward to Paris now in a few months' time, and you have to still get excited by it. I mean, trust me, it's a bit of a nightmare at times trying to get around, and obviously Tokyo had huge challenges as well, but. But I guess Paris will be my, I think it's my sixth Olympics, or I'm not sure now. But the first one I really, I actually covered Sydney from here because of the late night things. And then my first Olympics to actually cover in person would have been Athens in 2004, which again had all sorts of different challenges in terms of, I think, the construction and all that. But I mean, to this day, I can still remember being there when Hicham El Guerrouj won the 1500 meters, having lost in Sydney 4 years before, having fallen in Atlanta 4 years before that, and this was his like last chance for Olympic immortality, as they say, and famously won that race. And then you go over, like, obviously 2008, the memories of that. That's when Usain Bolt arrived on the scene, and you get to see the young Usain Bolt. And then in London, obviously you're thinking David Rudisha, you're thinking Mo Farah. Rio, to a lesser extent, doesn't stand out as being a particularly memorable Olympics. But Tokyo, despite all the challenges, I mean, the athletics in Tokyo were possibly some of the greatest of all, if you consider the likes of even Ingebrigtsen winning the 1500 meters at 20, and then obviously some of the new names arrived on there, like Carson Warholm in the 400 meter hurdles, running whatever he did, 45 seconds, and things like that. So every Olympics are different. There's lots of different memories, but and I think Paris will be another one to be really excited about as well. We all know the rivalry that's boiling away now in the men's 1500 meters, the men's 100 meters. There's a new guy, Letsile Tebogo from Botswana. I think is going to be already being dubbed as the new Usain Bolt. So there's really exciting athletes coming through there. So they're all different, Darren, to answer your question. And I think that's the beauty of the Olympics, is that I still get excited by them.
Okay, great. I'm gonna move on to the Olympics now, but I was just curious. Look, what are maybe this is a question you get all the time, but what are the challenges that sports journalists face today? Just to finish with that one, just to finish off the sports journalism section.
Well, again, to go back to the beginning, I mean, it's a completely different business than it was when I started out 30 odd years ago. I mean, there was no online, there was no social media, there was very little sort of outside pressure beyond what you actually wrote for the newspaper article itself. And once you wrote that, it went to print. That was kind of it. So there's pros and cons to that. I mean, back then, like, so if you missed a story or if something happened after midnight, you had to wait till the following day to get it in the paper. Whereas now you can update it for online. There could be something happens on Twitter you could react to. There could be a breaking news anywhere. So it's gone from maybe a 12-hour shift to a 24-hour shift. Literally, you could be something could break at any moment, and between time difference and everything. So that's the biggest challenge, is it's just switching off, just switching off. There's always a temptation to look online, or if something breaks, you could get an email about it. So I think that's the biggest challenge, is just trying to switch off from it. But look, that's the beauty of it as well, that if something happens, you can react to it immediately. You're not waiting till the newspaper the next day. I mean, obviously, like most sports, the access is not what it used to be. Because when I first went to the Olympic Games, there was only really print media and written media. Sorry, print media and, say, television. Whereas now you have your online, you have much more interest in the athletes for that kind of moment, their sound bite on whatever. So that's a challenge. But and then just trying to keep a relationship with the athletes, that's you have to keep your distance as well. You can't get too close to the athletes, because at some point you're going to have to be critical of them, and whether that's good or bad, you have to just always keep your distance a little bit. So it's great to have a good relationship with athletes, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to be honest. You have to be able to say if somebody runs badly, to put that into writing as well, and in such a way that it's not mean, or the athlete's going to take any offense to it. But so as I say, it's changing all the time. Paris is going to be different again in terms of the logistics of just physically getting around the city for what's going to be the first really busy Olympics, I think, since London. Because I mean, Rio, the crowds weren't great in Rio, and then obviously we all know what happened in Tokyo. So I think the biggest fear for Paris is just being able to deal with the crowds of people that are going to be there to witness what I think will be one of the special Olympics in terms of modern times.
But actually, that was one of my questions, was what do you think of Paris as a venue? So it's obviously going to be well attended, and people travel from all over. Do you think Paris is well prepared to host such a fantastic event? I'm sure it will be.
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're looking at it. It's a special Olympics for a few reasons from an Irish point of view. It's 100 years since we had our first participation as a free state in 1924. Didn't win any medals that time, but I mean that. And only recently, the Olympic Federation of Ireland published a list of all the Olympians that we've had since then, and it's less than 1,000 people. I think it's 900 and something. So that's not a huge number of people in 100 years who've actually represented Ireland in the Olympics. And they will surpass the 1,000 mark now in Paris, obviously, given the team is going to be probably our biggest team. But I think it's worth mentioning as well, all the Olympics that I've covered, like without a doubt, this is the most medal potential that I've ever remembered in any Olympics in modern times. If you think about the rowing, obviously, with boxing, we've seen that in the last number of years, but we have gymnastics now, we have even in track and field, hopefully a couple of medal hopes there. So it's really exciting that the country is able to compete now across a range of events. I mean, for years it was track and field. You might have a few boxers here and there, but and then of course you throw in golf, you throw in a few other sports like taekwondo. I think I wouldn't be surprised if we win five or six different medals in five or six different sports, which would be a great reflection, not just of athletics, obviously, but of Irish sport and all.
Fantastic. And you started off with two brilliant facts there about the 100 years and the less than 1,000 athletes. That's fascinating. So you kind of touched on a little bit, but maybe just to go back to, how do you assess then our current crop of Irish athletes relative to previous Olympics? You touched on it a bit, but you might want to expand on that.
Yeah, well, again, we're lucky that we have a few young athletes coming through now that'll be sort of keeping an eye on. And a few shout outs here. I think people like Feilim Kelly, who's done great work with the Dublin Track Club and just creating that kind of training environment now where there's places where athletes can go and just train together. Because that was always the biggest single, I think, sort of a crack in the Irish system was there was very little cohesion between athletes. They were training all on their own. So I think that's a positive sign. It's still a hard sport. You still have to put the work in. And I think it was Feilim Kelly who was said that people kind of laugh sometimes now when somebody runs a sub-4 in a mile because they think, oh, well, because of the spikes or the new tracks or whatever. But you still have to be very dedicated and very committed to do that. And so I think it's still a difficult sport, and you do have to be very committed. And I go back to my own time. I think you have to have a hunger and a drive, which if you don't have that, you're not going to go very far. I definitely think our sprinters are they're showing real potential now as well. I know Israel Olatunde has had a difficult couple of seasons since Munich, but like he's certainly put the men's sprinting back on the map. We saw what Charlie Maudsley did indoors this year as well. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if she really steps up again in the 400 meters. I suppose being a kind of romantic at heart, it's disappointing we don't have our marathon runners being a little bit more competitive. I mean, it's great that Fionnuala McCormack was to qualify for fifth Olympics. I know like
There's a London coming up. There still might be a chance. Well, there's a
exactly.
few
No,
people trying anyway.
there's still a few chances out there, so I certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't rule anybody out yet. And of course, it's 40 years since John Tracy won his silver medal in Los Angeles. And I mean, whatever about being a surprise back then, I mean, will we ever see an Irish person back on the medal podium of a marathon again? But again, that's a reflection of how the things have how the event has changed as well. I mean, look at the qualifying times now for the marathon. Look at the qualifying time for the 10,000 meters. It's like 27 minutes. I mean, I think until recently, no European born runner had even broken 27 minutes. That's only happened recently. So the qualifying standards are so difficult now as well. Now I noticed the qualifying quotas, which are sometimes even a better route to take for many athletes. But it goes back to my point about just qualifying for the Olympics is such a big deal. And we'll be lucky that we'll have quite a large Irish team this year going to Paris on the track and fields. Including we already have three women in the 1500 meters in Sarah Healy, Ciara McGeehan, and Sophie O'Sullivan. So that's exciting alone to have three women in the one race. But anyway, to answer your question, yeah, I would be. I definitely think that Irish, there's a realization now as well that the sport it needs its support and it needs its encouragement. But I think the athletes are reacting to that. Plus, I think it's important to say as well, we've got a European Championships this year in Rome in June, which is kind of it's going to be low key compared to Paris, but I think that's where we could see a lot of Irish athletes succeeding at European level. There's talk McGeehan is going to run there. There's talk that Rashida wants to run there. So it's not all based on the Olympics, of course, but because I mean, I think to win a medal at a European Championships this year would be huge. And I know from talking to Sonny O'Sullivan recently as well, I mean, Sonny was of that old school. Like, it was a medal to be won. Why not go for it? So it's great to see that more athletes are seeing that opportunity now. And I'd be delighted to see a really hot large Irish team competing in Rome.
Yeah, I got that sense. I read the article about the cross country. It seemed she might have been disappointed that more people didn't enter the World Championships. But yeah, it's all very interesting. So, are there any kind of less well-known athletes that we should keep an eye on? Is
Well,
that a
no. Well, I mentioned Feilim Kelly there, on the Dublin Track Club. Like, he's got a lot of young athletes now coming through the ranks. You just out of school, who are doing really well. And if you look at that World Cross Country, for example, I think the likes of Anna Gardner, who did really well. She's probably one of our top young cross country runners in the country right now. She's one to look out for. So yeah, it's hard to know, because the critical period goes back to what I was talking about there, the 18 to 22. Just that's the period in any sports, but I think particularly athletics, that's where there's a huge drop off. There's a huge does that does it is a big jump to get to a successful schoolboy, and then if you go to a college in America, or if you stay here, it's very difficult to maintain that trajectory, especially if you've been successful at age 16, 17, 18. Having said that, we've seen two of our best athletes of recent times do that. I mean, Rashida has just kept getting better and better and better. And then you look at Nick Riggs up from down from Tyrone as well. I mean, he probably one of our most successful juniors in terms of his times and his performances. And he's looks like he's kicking off on that again. He's had some really good indoor times. He had a good road time there recently as well. So I'd be very surprised if he doesn't qualify for the Olympics. So there are two examples of athletes who've made and gone down different paths as well. I mean, Nick Riggs stayed in Ireland, decided it wasn't for him to go away. So that's exciting to see as well. So yeah, it's I suppose it's just trying to maintain that progress. And if you don't maintain that, not to panic and take your time. And again, Ciara Mcgeoghegan is a perfect example of that. That she effectively missed out from age 20 right to 23, I think it was, before she got back to her first Irish best. So that period that she missed out on is probably serving her well now. The fact that she's still running so well into her 30s. So yeah, there's no best route. There'll be definitely be obstacles placed along the way, but that's where good coaches comes in, good guidance and good nurturing, and a good federation as well. And in fairness to Athletics Ireland, I've been critical in the past of some of their moves, but they've got a bit more structure now in terms of an endurance lead with Mark Keneally, and they're obviously putting those key roles in place now. So at least athletes have somewhere to turn to, and that they don't feel like they're just being left behind if they do face injury or illness or something like that.
Yeah, and like it's not all about medals. So, what are the type of ways that athletes might measure success or benchmark their success, particularly the younger athletes? Is it gaining experience
Yeah,
or?
again, I'm going back to my own time. I mean, it's just the enjoyment you get out of this, and the friends you meet, the chance to travel, and anybody who runs. I mean, yourself, it's just the benefits you're going to get from the sense of well-being and the mental health and all of that. So I think that's something we sometimes overlook as well. And I still run. I've no desire to go out and set any personal bests, but I still enjoy the physical action of running, and that goes back to that's something I've had since a very young age. So I think that's if at, young athletes can realize that, not even young athletes, all any age, when you just realize the benefits of it. And okay, we haven't had great weather conditions recently, but being able to get out, you always feel better for a run. And I think of Noel Carroll's quote as well: if it's a wet day or if it's a cold day. Noel Carroll always said there's no such thing as bad weather, but it's only weak runners. And you so little reminders of that to kind of push you through it. So yeah, so I think it's just the enjoyment part, and you appreciate it, and being able to realize that it's the benefits are always going to outweigh the negatives of having to get out the front door or the back door or whatever it is, and still being able to enjoy that and not put too much pressure on yourself as well. I think sometimes athletes put a little bit too much pressure on themselves to keep improving or racing, or if they're not running well, or if they're not having a setting of personal bests or whatever, that they get uptight about that. So because no runner has a perfectly smooth career. Like, there's always going to be ups and downs. And again, you mentioned Sonia Sullivan there. I've been looking to see some of Sonia Sullivan's diaries, and you'd be surprised the stuff she has written in there as well about, felt crap today, this kind of stuff. So there's always going to be days like that where you don't feel well. And you kind of go, oh, geez, why am I even doing this? But those days will always pass. And I think the positives, as I say, the positive runs will always be the ones that you'll remember the most.
Brilliant. And then look, we obviously have lots of high profile athletes at the moment. And what are your thoughts on the role they have to play in promoting athletics amongst the general Irish population?
Well, again, I think we're lucky that we have those personalities, the likes of Kieran McGee and the likes of Sarah Lavin. I mean, some of our men's distance runners, I'm thinking Andrew Coskren, like there's a good crop of them there. So I guess just the personalities. I mean, in fairness to Rashida Adeleke, I was very lucky. I actually went out to visit her in Texas last year to do an article for a magazine. And she feels like she's a long way from home, but like one of the first things I really got the sense from her was that she really does appreciate the support she gets back here, whether it's on social media or people coming up to her after. I don't know if you were in Santry last year, but she didn't actually run, but there was a huge crowd of people just coming to get her autograph and get a picture, and she very 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 politely obliged to that. So I think athletes do appreciate that. I think that's the first thing to say. They do always try to put up their best. Kieran McGeehan as well. I mean, just great talking to Kieran McGeehan. And Sarah Lavin as well is always uplifting. So yeah, the personalities are important. It can't be easy all the time. I mean, if you've had a bad run and you're trying to put on that smiling, brave face, can't be easy. And look, some athletes don't particularly create the profile either. I mean, I mentioned Fionnuala McCormack must be the least, the most modest athlete we've ever had. She doesn't want any recognition for what she's done, even though she's going to make history as the most our most
Amazing.
biggest sorry most successful Olympian in terms of representing the country 5 times. So you got to respect that as well. Although she's certainly well able to talk about the sport when she wants to. I don't think she's shy. She just doesn't care for the publicity. So to say it, to say it's different for different athletes, but to a large extent, I mean, again, without going on about Rashida, like she's almost a
She's got star quality.
global superstar now. I mean, after her performances in Budapest last year, she was being watched. They were talking to American television, British television, obviously. So it's been a long time since we've had that. So look, we're lucky. We're very lucky. But I mean, it goes back to my point about how athletics has this amazing ability in this country just to keep recycling itself, but we just keep producing great athletes. And I think it's in our DNA somewhere. And despite sometimes my own criticisms of it over the years, and maybe despite what we say about the GAA and rugby and all that being more important sports, I think athletics holds a special place in this country, and we see that repeatedly. And you mentioned the Dublin Marathon at the start of this conversation, and I think I was chatting to Jim Ockney, the race director, and they have about 20,000 entries to play with, but there was, I think, over 30,000 entries looking for entry through the lottery, and that was on top of 10,000 preferred entries. So they could have sold that race out twice, essentially, is what he's saying, which for a relatively small city marathon like Dublin is not bad. I don't it's never going to be like Boston or New York, where we're going to have 45,000 runners, but I think the amount of people just involved in that level of running as well, just the participation is amazing. I mean, like I can still remember when I started out running, like you'd get the odd looks, people would be looking at you going, why is this person running down the street on a dark night? And now if I go out in the evening and you see so many people running, I just have to smile and go, this has come a long
Fantastic.
way from 20, 30 years ago.
I just have a couple more questions. Next up is, I suppose, what are the events that you're really, really looking forward to at the Olympics, and perhaps what rivalries would you like to highlight as well as ones to watch out for? You
Well,
touched on 1500 meters there earlier, but
I think I've already, just dropped that hint about that. I think Jacob Ingebrigtsen, we all know that he's such a rare talent in every level. And then you throw in the two British runners, Jake Whiteman and sorry, the other guy's getting me, Kerr, Josh Kerr, Josh Kerr. So you've got two Brit, you've got the British rivalry, first of all, and then you've got the throw him in against Ingebrigtsen, and it's just going to be fascinating. It's just going to be fascinating. And I'm amazed actually watching those three that they all seem to be quite engaging with social media. Like Jacob Ingebrigtsen is always posting something on X or Instagram of his training sessions. I see Jake Whiteman did one the other night as well. So I'd love to know the mind games behind that. Like, I mean, I'd be personally, I'd be terrified. I would just
Yeah,
wouldn't want to
keeping the
go
head
there.
down.
So they seem to almost be embracing this rivalry. And that we all saw what Josh Kerr was saying about, and also when Ingebrigtsen said he could have beaten Josh Kerr with one hand tied behind, and also blindfolded. I can't remember exactly what his word term was, but it wasn't very praiseworthy. So that's going to be a fascinating race to see how that unfolds. I mentioned 100 meters. There's still something about the 100 meters in the Olympics, which is special. Even though in Tokyo it wasn't a particularly fascinating race because the Italian sprinter won that and hasn't done a whole lot since. And then it's just like, how far can they keep going? I mean, I mentioned Carson Walholm in the 400-meter hurdles. I mean, he smashed a world record, and yet he still seems hungry for more. Like, I mean, how much more can he keep pushing the barrier? Obviously, you got Mondo Duplantis in the pole vaults. I mean, the field events are really coming on now as well, just to see how much further they can keep pushing those barriers. Because for years you kind of think, well, they set a world record, and that's going to stand for years. And then they come out the next year and they beat it again and they beat it again. So there's all those kind of subplots in the field events as well, to see how much further they can go on. I've always had a great soft spot for the Olympic marathon as well. And
I
again,
was
like
just
that,
going to say, can Kipchoge do it?
yeah. I mean, obviously we're all, you know, the tragic death earlier on this year, then as well, you know, just the world record holder just took a huge amount of just excitement out of that race. And it was so tragic for that. So that's why I think, can Kipchoge go for three in a row? No man or woman has won three Olympic marathons in succession. He didn't have a great run in Tokyo last month. I think his worst finish in a long time. So, but I wouldn't be surprised if he gets it almost right on the day. The women's marathon as well is the very last events in Paris, so they've got big plans to make that a big showcase. So, but the Olympics always throws up new stars as well. I mean, I don't think anybody would have really kind of thought that Jacob Ingebrigtsen was going to win a 1500 meter so convincingly in Tokyo. So there's a few young 1500 meter guys coming up. What's his name? Is it Niels Laros from the Netherlands? And there's another really good Australian runner as well in the 1500 meters. So there's a couple of really young guys coming up on the scene as well, which are going to make that race just fascinating. So you wouldn't know who's going to come through on that. And yeah, I mean, obviously after that, then you're looking at like the men's 400 meters is always a wide open race, and as I say, the women's 400 meters as well, where we're going to hopefully have a lot of very strong Irish interest. And you're going to have a super super race there, because Shauna Uber Miller, the reigning Olympic champion, two-time Olympic champion, missed last year. She was just back from childbirth, so she's going to make a three Olympic gold medals. And then obviously we've got Paulinho from the World Championships from last year. So that's before you get to Rashida trying to get onto that medal podium. So the women's 400 meters is possibly going to be one of the most competitive races of all at the Olympics, in terms of the people who could be there and the times they've run, and of course the American, if she decides to race as well. So that's a race where, even without any Irish interest, I think we could all be excited about.
Oh, it's very exciting. And hopefully all our young club members will be tuning in and be inspired by all these fantastic athletes. So I was just curious, given it's a club-based podcast, are you still involved to an extent with Dundrum South Dublin or any club-based athletics?
Not unfortunately, no. I mean, even though it's still considered my club, and they built a fantastic new facility not far from where I live here, down at the foothills of the Dublin Mountains, probably one of the best tracks in just locations in Ireland. But unfortunately for me, it's more I just don't have the time. I mean, I'd love to be able to commit at weekends, but unfortunately at weekends I do a lot of other sports as well outside of athletics. I do a fair bit of GA, so my Sundays are invariably taken up at some godforsaken GA ground around the country. So unfortunately, I don't. But I still run with a few people occasionally, and I still try to get out with people maybe once, at least once a week, just to kind of remind yourself, as I say, why you run and the enjoyment of it and the camaraderie like that. And but the problem is, I still have a little bit of competitive instinct. So if people start putting myself in a putting us in a race situation, I'm inclined to want to win things. So I have to stay well clear of tempo runs or track sessions or anything like that, because because I just still have that sort of competitive urge to try and run fast, which is never a good idea when you get to my age. But no, but I would still follow like club athletes quite closely as well. And I think at school's athletics as well. I mean, I was out of the school's cross country a few weeks ago there down at Tyneman Park, and just to see the young athletes coming through at that level is always great to see. And the school's track and field championship now in Tullamore at the first weekend in June. That's always a day trip for me, just to go down there and just remind yourself of the romantic draw of schoolboy and schoolgirl athletics. So I still keep an eye on that for sure.
Brilliant. And then any projects, upcoming projects you can share with us, or interesting articles on the way? You were very quick to get the Meriton article out today. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I'll just leave you with an interesting thought, because we actually are doing a series on around Olympic success stories that maybe people wouldn't be so aware of. I mean, obviously, people all know about Sonia, about Ronnie Delaney, and obviously John Tracy. And it hasn't appeared yet, but everyone knows that John Tracy won a silver medal in Los Angeles in 1984. His debut marathon, the classic finish with Carlos Lopez and Charlie Spenning in 2:09. But what people didn't realize was, like, less than a year before that, Tracy's career was at rock bottom. He dropped out of the world championships in no sorry he dropped out of the world cross country that year. He ran the world championships in Helsinki when Eamonn Coughlin won the gold medal, and John Tracy finished well down the field in 10,000 meters. So his career was at rock bottom, and he faced a decision then: is do I change something here, or am I just going to keep going down the wrong path? And he made a big bold move. He went back to America with his wife and a toddler, a very young daughter, and went back to his old training ground in Providence, and just got back with the training environment that I was talking about, and got very lucky that he got a new sponsorship deal. Started working with a doctor who was more prioritizing injury prevention and all that kind of stuff. And then he just managed to turn that corner very slowly, around the world cross country, I think in 84, finished about 13, but he kept coming back. And then just by his own sheer will, he got back to that point where he was able to race at his best in Los Angeles. So again, it's the kind of the backstories that we don't often hear about, that you forget. And I suppose the determination that Tracy had, and the self-belief that the talent will always be there. Like, I mean, you might get injured, you might go off form. People might say, ah, he's not the athlete he used to be. But Tracy had that belief that he had to get back, but he had to do it himself. Like, there was nobody gonna hold him by the hand. He had to make that decision. I just found that really fascinating, how he was able to get back. And also around the 10,000 meters in Los Angeles, people forget that he ran the heats and the final. So that's 50 laps of the Coliseum in a steaming hot Olympics. And funny enough, my father was at those Olympics, and he used to tell me the story of when John came through the mix zone after the 10,000 meters, and he looked wrecked. He was completely dehydrated. And my dad said to him, like, "Well, I presume, John, you're not going to run the marathon after that." And John's exact words were, "Oh no, I'm definitely running the marathon after that." And lo and
Like, how
behold,
many days in the difference?
I think it was 5 days. He was six 5 days to recover, and 6 days later, and he went out
Very
and
much.
ran 2:09 in the searing heat of Los Angeles. So I think if you talk about great athletics moments, that certainly ranks up there for me. Same as Sonia coming back in 2000s. I mean, don't forget, a year before that, or 2 years before that, well, certainly 1999 was not a great year for Sonia. She took a year out having had a child, and she had lots of moments in 2000 when it looked like she was not going to make it back. But she was like, just had that belief that she could still achieve, still reach the very top. And that's what makes her silver medal so precious as well.
Brilliant. So you have a couple of articles coming out in relation to those type of topics,
That's
or
going to be a series we're running. Yes, a kind of a
series. Yeah.
series
Okay.
of
Brilliant.
the untold
Looking forward
stories
to it.
behind the Olympics. I'm not quite sure when it's going to start, but yeah, we will. There's a few things we'll do around, obviously, the 1924 Olympics as well. Like, who was the first Irish athlete to compete there? But other than that, it's more about just trying to keep an eye on our own athletes. As I say, the European Championships coming up in June. I think that's going to
Yeah.
be really exciting to see how they get on. So look at keeping an eye out for that. And you just don't know. There's still time for the thing about Olympics is it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen in an Olympic year. People could get injured, people could get sick, people could suddenly arrive out of nowhere. But I like the fact that it's kind of keeping it low key at the moment. Like, okay, I think Rashid is going to do a few more relays over the next few weeks. Kieran McGeehan's keeping it low profile. I think it's good that athletes are kind of waiting in the long grass to some extent. We didn't have too many athletes running indoors, which is a pity, but I think they all realized that, okay, would it be nice to be running an indoors in Glasgow, but the spotlight in Paris. And I think if anybody is either going to be traveling over there or watching on television, I mean, it's essentially a home Olympics. There's no time difference, so everything's going to be happening in real time. So you'd be getting up in the morning, you'd be watching the heats, and you'd be watching the finals at night. So it'll be very much like you're part of those Olympics. So I think, as I said, I think the interest in Paris is going to be it's going to be enormous, and hopefully we'll have some positive news to write home about. And I think we will. I'll be confident that, look, I mean, without predicting medals or anything like that, as you say, it's not all about medals, but if we have finalists, if we have a few national records, and even to get the relays qualified as well, will certainly be will be exciting.
Fantastic. I think that's a really nice way to end it. So we really look forward to that. But I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to chat to us. We really appreciate it. We look forward to your articles that are out, appear every weekend in the Irish Times and the new series, as you mentioned. So I wish you the very best of luck with that. And yeah, thanks again, Ian. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks again, and best luck to all for the season.
Really great chatting to Ian and getting his perspective on sports journalism and the upcoming Olympics. Next up, we have Colm's interview with Emma.
Welcome to the Lusk KC Pod. An absolute privilege to have you on. So maybe as a start, maybe start telling us a little bit about the woman behind the Hill Sessions on Clubs app and the WhatsApp groups. Where are you from? Family, work, how long you live in Lusk, that kind of
Okay,
thing.
so hi, my name is Emma Przymuszynska. I'm not Polish. I'm married to Jimmy. He's Polish. I have two kids, Ava and Alex. They're 7 and 4. I'm originally from Santry and I've lived in Lusk since 2015.
Lovely. So maybe we get a little bit into your running history, ask you to take it back to the start. What got you into running, or what was the motivation, and what kept you going back for more when you started?
So I've never really been a runner. I only started running when I was 30 after my second child. Running was always in my family. My dad was a runner. He ran for Clonliffe Harriers. We grew up in Coolock Sandy area, and he was a fantastic runner for road race. He did a lot of road races. He did a lot of track and field. 5K was his specialty, and his PB was 14:57. So I've always had that growing up. I've always seen him running. I've always went to watch races. But did he join us in athletics as children?
So
No. We weren't encouraged,
what?
really. I think he just focused on himself. No, I'm joking. But I was
So
always sporty. So I
how
did.
come you haven't got the speed of your dad
I'm trying to get it.
then? Sorry, Em, I
that's what
didn't.
the track
We
and field.
might cut
Yeah,
that
it's fine. I'm okay with it. So I've always been sporty, though. I did camogie and I did soccer up until I was in my teens, and I kind of, enjoyed my 20s in college and never really did much. And then after I had my second baby, during the pandemic, 2020, I struggled with postnatal depression and I just needed to join something to get me out of the house, and that's the only reason I joined Lusk KC.
It wasn't for a love of running
No,
or
I hated it.
literally just to get
I
out of the
didn't own
house.
a smartwatch. I didn't know how to run, didn't know anything about running, and would have ran a little bit with my dad. We might have gone out to DCU and done a couple of runs together, but it would have been completely
Yeah,
easy.
well, it's as good a reason as any, and I'm sure there's plenty of people in the club who just come down on a Tuesday and
Yeah.
Thursday literally to get out of the house for an hour or
Exactly.
two
I
and to meet their friends and have a little jog around.
more for social reasons.
Yeah.
My friend Sarah and I joined together, and I remember Nicole saying to us, okay, they're doing this 8K jog up to Baldong, and we ran 3K and we were out of breath and we ran back and we were like, that was so hard, we're never doing that
Yeah.
again. But we came
I
back,
think
so
the first time I ever remember you running or seeing you running was, remember we did the COVID relays?
did
Remember
we
we
do
did the COVID relays
I
back
didn't do
when the
COVID
pandemic was
relays.
on? Yeah, we did it. The first one we did was like a 12
Was
hour,
it
8 to
fast?
8. And
No.
I'd never heard of you before, but like you did. There were five, the
Oh, okay. I don't
5Ks.
remember that. Yeah.
And I think you did one of them,
Okay.
and because your name was just unusual, and I was like, I didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, she must be Polish, But anyway, so you've done a few races. Can you remember what your first race experience was like?
Yes, and it's a funny story. I don't know if anyway. So it was Ruhini 5 Mile in 2021, and I didn't own a watch. I remember Nicole saying to me, you need to get yourself one of those watches, and went out. Sean, my friend next door, came in and we were just about to go to the race together. And I said, do you want a cup of tea? He said, I don't think we should be drinking tea before we go to the race. I said, why? I had no idea about fueling or about what to drink or what not to drink before you go to race. I said, I always have a cup of tea at the race at like 3. We were leaving at 1. I said, no, we have a cup of tea. I had a cup of tea. He didn't. And we left for the race. I didn't go to the bathroom. I was at the start line, felt fine, ran out up to 6K. I was like, oh my God, I have to go to the bathroom. Anyway, I know it's too much information, but I wet myself in the 7 kilometre, like proper wet myself. So it was a hard lesson learned that day. Don't drink a cup of tea before the race.
Harrowing first race experience.
Go to the bathroom before the race. I'm out like, and I mean, I learned so much in that first race that I did. I went out, I didn't look at my watch. So I really enjoyed it, loved it. Up until 6K, I was like, oh my God, I actually think I have to go to the bathroom. Jimmy came out to support and he was taking photos at like 7K going into the 8K. And it was the year the Rohini 5 mile was the race distance was measured longer. So I was like, when is this over? I'll just keep going. It was another 500 metres longer.
That's the last
like,
thing oh you needed. God. Another half a mile.
Jimmy's there being the perfect running husband, taking all the photos or whatever. And me, the only photos are of me who wet myself, which I was really upset about at the time, but now I laugh about it. But
that was
my first race experience completely.
I'm surprised you came back for more.
Yeah,
Well, apart from the wetting yourself, any other memorable race moments that you can remember?
I mean, do you remember the first time we did a graded on the Tala track in the Tala Stadium? We did a graded one together.
Oh, wasn't that summer? I remember. Before. Yeah,
that was my favorite run ever. I mean, that was 800 meters, and it was my first time ever doing a track. I was kind of persuaded to do it by Aidan and Nicole. I was like, oh God, I wouldn't be fast enough. I didn't know anything about graded.
Was that Aura Smith was coaching you, wasn't she?
Yeah. And I bought myself a pair of spikes like 2 days before I went out, and I was so nervous. And I did the 800. I signed up for the 800, and with the graded meetings, I thought these races are so fast, and I wouldn't be able to do it. So there's A, B, C, and D, and you sign up to D, which is like the lower level.
D is still fairly competitive.
D's still really fast. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but look, it's not as competitive. Like graded meetings are more like a park run. So it was. I didn't realize that at the time. So went out and I met you there. I was so nervous, but I did that 800 meter race and I thought like that. I just remember that race because it was so short. It was like, well, it was like 2 minutes, 47 seconds. Yeah.
Oh my God. I know, but you're wrecked.
Like lung burn.
Oh my God.
But it taught you a lot because I joined track and field at that time. And that's why Nicole encouraged me to do that 800 meter graded meeting. And I joined track and field that summer. And in that short race, it teaches you about every race so that you go out, you drive it out, and you run steady fast, you settle into your pace, and then you finish strong, all within that really short space of time. You do that for all your races. And I think that 800 meter race,
it's a little snapshot, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah,
we'll come back to a little bit of that track and field stuff in a little bit, because we want to get into that, you being ladies track captain and everything. But you're sort of famous for being really nervous before races. I've been in a car with you, as many others who listen have been in a car with you before races. And
a couple of voice notes before and after.
Your nervous agitation is something to behold. So how have you got over these nerves, or how have you learned to live with them before races?
Well, I'm proud to say I'm fixed now and I'm not nervous anymore.
Right, tell us more about that.
It's a magical potion that I got for Christmas. Yes, I have always struggled with nerves. So because I did, I ran a park run in, I think it was 2022, and I went out to get a sub 21, and I started out my 5K at 21 minutes 30, and I went out to get a sub 21 a couple months after, and I got it, and I kept getting PBs, and I was really happy. And then I put so much pressure on myself to get a sub 20, which I was nowhere near the times at all. And I was like, oh, I really want to get that sub 20. Little did I know it would take me 2 years and how much work was involved in getting it. And the amount of pressure I put myself on, I kept getting nervous. I would often even book a race and just not go. That's how nervous I get, like completely stupid thing. And I'd get like, I wouldn't sleep the night before. I'd get myself all worked up. And so I just put myself, no one put pressure on me. I put all this pressure on myself. No matter what race it was, I kept like looking at my watch during the race and getting really stressed. I'd often even stop in a race. And I was like, I'm just not even enjoying this. So I stopped going to kind of club races and things like that, because I always just stressed myself out. So I did very little racing last year. And now I was injured as well, so that took a lot of time. But the night before I did the Jingle Bells race, the 5K race in December, Aidan McKenna rang me the night before. He said, you know what you should do? Just go out and not look at your watch and just go and enjoy it. And I said, do you know what, I will, because I had a bit of an injury. It was only a niggle, wasn't really an injury, in the weeks leading up to it. And I said, you know what, that's what exactly what I'm going to do. I didn't really stick to the plan. I didn't, you know, do all the training first. I was getting all that into my head already. So I woke up and I went out, and on the first kilometre, I turned my watch around and I went out and I enjoyed it. I loved it.
Oh, you still wore your watch, but you
still
just
wore my watch
just
and I turned
didn't
around,
bother
yes,
looking.
For proof. Just, you know, Strava.
It didn't happen.
Running, yeah. So I turned it around, but I could feel it like buzz at every kilometre. So I knew where I was at. So I went out and I loved it. I just ran by my body, ran by my feel, and I loved it. It didn't hurt and I just really enjoyed it. And when I stopped my watch at the finish line, it said 1957, and because Aidan kept telling me, you'll get that sub 20 when you least expect it and when you're not nervous and when you stop putting yourself under pressure. And I thought it was a mistake. I thought the GPS or something didn't pick it up, so I didn't even bother check the results. And then I think someone in the club said to me, no, you got your sub 20. And I was like, what? Check the results. And it was such a surreal moment. Like, it was that day when I didn't feel stressed, didn't feel pressure, when I didn't care, is when I actually performed the best. So that's my vibe now.
I think there's a lesson in that for anybody who gets, like everybody gets nervous before, right? Like even before any race, even if I'm going, even on a park run, if I want to do a good park run.
I wouldn't even go to park
run. You know, you kind of wake up, there's a different feeling. You know, race day, there's a different feeling. And, but I think it's probably just, but, you have to, like
you
say,
need to get fixed like me. You need that.
Well, I think that's it. A little nervous feeling is good. It's like an adrenaline. You know what I mean? But like, you don't want it to be crippling anxiety that you can't. It's stopping you from enjoying the race.
And now I've done already the 85-mile, lost 4 mile. I absolutely loved it, and I went out with the same approach. Turned my watch around and just enjoyed it, and I performed better than I expected. Then I booked Dunboyne the night before, or a couple, like I think 2 days before, which wouldn't be me. I'd have to book weeks in advance and I prepare for it. And Dwayne encouraged me to book Dunboyne 10K, went out to start line. I didn't feel nervous at all and was delighted with that run. Was just went out and enjoyed. Never raced 10K, so I had no expectations. So all I could do was enjoy it.
Yeah. So you joined the club in 2021.
Yeah,
2020. So what difference have you noticed in your running since you've joined the club, or, you know,
How is it different? I didn't really run before, but I ran easy for the first while because I only gave birth, so I joined the club after when Alex was 4 months. I didn't really do much running. And then Sheila started a 5K plan. So I kind of learned what a repeat was. I remember being on Strava. I joined Strava and I was like, oh my God. Well, I was like, what are all these abbreviations? Like W, U and CD. I was like, I don't know anything about running. This is, now I know some things, although I don't know the marathon lingo, like AT and whatever. I don't know. It's still things I have to learn. But anyway, I'm better. But I knew nothing. So I used to just run all with the same pace and I probably just ran as hard as possible all the time. But I did Sheila's 5K plan. She was just wonderful. Her coaching was just amazing. I was always really inspired by her and she kind of encouraged me to join her sessions. And after that, I think I moved to, I think everyone was getting into marathon training and all that. And Nicole was like, no, don't do a marathon. You're too young to do a marathon and learn how to run properly. So I moved to track and field where Aidan McKenna was coaching the development squad. And there I was taught how to run without a watch, learning how to listen to your body, listen to your breathing, learn how to run consistent. I learned how to pace. I ran on the grass. That really improved my run. I got quite quick in a short space of time. I think that's why I wanted the sub 20 so badly, that I thought I could do it in a shorter space than I could.
Why do you think training on the grass benefits you? Why do you work harder on the grass?
Oh, we've no track, I mean, but we have to make do with the grass. But the grass, and we run the grass in our gill, and the training on the grass will make you faster on the road. So your legs are working harder. And when you train on the grass, your times are going to be slower for the repeats and for any session that you're doing. But when you go out on the road, you'll just feel that difference in your running for a repeat session. Like, say you do 400 metres on the grass.
It's just naturally softer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if the grass is mucky and wet, like it usually is, then you're going to be much faster on the road after. But the difference in my running I felt since I joined Lusk AC, I know how to pace myself. I know how to listen to my body.
How did you learn this?
By Coach Aidan McKenna. Like, he would teach me, he would teach us all like how to move your arms. Like, I didn't know about this techniques to running, like moving your arms, the importance of moving your arms while you run, the importance of relaxing your shoulders, to run relaxed, to listen to your body, to be able to run by feel, to not look at your watch and still know what pace you're doing. Like, I did Dunboyne last week and I knew I was running 4:15. I didn't need to look at my watch to know that pace. And that's what I like about the track and field and the track sessions and how...
What made you join the sort of train with the juveniles and the sort of the track and field area?
Only because everyone was getting into marathon, half marathon plans.
And there was nowhere else to go. There was nowhere else to go.
I didn't want to get sucked into marathon.
I know, I know what you mean.
The only reason why I joined it, because I just said, you know what, I remember one day, and Dwayne asked me, what's my favourite run? And I said, our running session, I said, geez, I love 400 metres. And he was like, no. He looked at me like a stranger. Well, I said, I really love 400 meter sessions, 200 meter sessions, all that really short, sharp stuff. I love them. So that's what you get on track and field. I mix it up between adults and track now. I do a bit of both.
Yeah. So you've been appointed ladies track and field captain. So when did that happen and what does this involve?
It happened last year. So last year I helped organise. Well, I took part in the indoor league. Sheila was track captain previously, so I took part in the indoor league. I really enjoyed it, and I stayed with track and field that year as well. I helped then organise the outdoor league in Santry Stadium. They have a new track. They had a new track there, and I really enjoyed it. I really like organising events. So anything like an event like the Christmas party or any leagues like that, I'm just all over. I love it. I love organising things like that. So. Really enjoyed the day, and I did an event myself, and I love just getting people on board and motivating them and making sure they're rested and they're fueled and getting photos of them, making them feel really special. And it's a big day out for the club. It's just fantastic. So and I help train the juveniles as well. So I know them, I know everyone, and we're trying to always get people on board in track and field. So I suppose it was probably a natural fit that Nicole just asked me would I be interested in being track captain for 2024. So felt like I couldn't say no. No, I said yeah.
You can't say no to Nicole.
Absolutely not. I love it.
So, the one I met you at, the graded meeting, have you done any more of them?
Yeah, we're right.
And
I've
just done one, scarred from the experience. For people who haven't done them, could you explain what they are? And would you encourage, because we've really good roadrunners, we encourage them to have a go at those meetings.
Graded meetings are just fantastic. It's like a park run on the track. So, like I said, it's divided into A, B, C, and D being the lowest grade. So you just throw yourself into grade D and see how you get on.
And how far are the races?
They can be anything between, I think, 60 metres up to 5K. And then there's field events as well. But it's I normally do 800. I might try a 1,500 meter this year. But it's just to try something different to, like, if you want to settle your nerves. I think that's how what also worked for me is do a track event. Everyone's watching you. There's nowhere to hide.
And there's only eight people in it.
People beside you.
I know.
You don't look at your watch. You can't stop. You can't hide. Do a track event. It'll just, if you can do a track event, you can do any race. Mm. But, it's the best feeling ever. You'd go with no watch, and it's just...
It's proper race.
It's proper race, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, you don't need to be the fastest person in the world. It's not about speed. You just go and do it and enjoy it. And it's not as competitive as, say, a league. So I would definitely encourage anyone to join, to do a grade meeting. I mean, they're starting now in May and they'll finish in July, and I'll be promoting them. I should probably start promoting them already. After Garstown anyway, and I'd encourage anyone to do them, and hopefully we'll book one in Santry where we get everyone out. So ALSA sessions as well are starting for track and field every Monday from the 8th of April. So that'd be good for people if they want to come and join. If they can't make any other sessions, come on a Monday night, get used to the track and ALSA. It's just a bit of fun, and getting people, it's more to get the juveniles prepared for any of the leagues or any of competition. But if anyone wants to join in, it's so much fun, and prepare and then go do a graded meeting and see how you get on. You'll have a time. All you do is get texted a time after. It's like a park run.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah,
but without the competition or the stress, it's just go out and do it. No one cares,
Yeah, they're good. They are. They're good fun, all right. That time I did it. I might try and see if I can do one.
Do one this year.
I'll try and get to do one.
Yeah.
Obviously, with the great news lately of Lusk getting a new running track.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Probably next year, maybe. How do you think this will impact the club in relation to track and field competition?
Oh, massively. I mean, this track is long overdue. We train on the grass in the hub at the moment, and sometimes the conditions can be so bad that we'd have to change around a session or do it in around the hub. We've no lighting in the winter, so this is just now the game changer for Lusk, for all levels, all abilities. Anyone from marathon down to 5k to track and field can come and join, do a track session, do their speed session, and enjoy running on a track. And it will obviously improve the running ability within the club and get us prepared for any the leagues that are upcoming.
Do you think...
You can host competitions as well, I presume.
We can host, yeah. Exactly. Didn't think about that. Mm. But I suppose maybe with the... we're having a track, this may very well encourage people to do those graded meetings, because a lot of people have no experience of running on a track.
Exactly, but I mean, we do set out a track in the hub. I mean, it's on the grass, but it is set out like...
Oh, I know, but like running on a proper, proper running track.
Yeah, running on a proper track, isn't that?
Because there's a difference in feel.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful feeling running on a track. I love it.
Yeah.
I think everyone should experience it, even for just a session. Might organise a session with a load of music and make it fun. And also... Club launch.
Exactly, yeah. Right, we've got a few quickfire round questions here. Tell us about your most exotic or memorable race.
I don't like travelling far for a race because if it's far away, I just won't go. It's too far. But I've been to Mead for Dunboy. It's probably my most exotic race.
Oh, beautiful Mead. So the Dunboyne 10K, was that your most... Was that your most memorable?
It was Rathfarnham further than that, or Talla, when we went to the graded meeting. I don't go far for a race, sure. It's far I'm not going. I will, though. I will venture. I might do Parkrun in Poland now when I go in the summer.
Oh, right, I see. So Dunboyne 10K, would that be your most memorable race?
No, not most memorable, most exotic.
Most exotic?
Most memorable race was probably...
As Noel O'Reilly will say, Mead is probably one of the most exotic places he's ever been.
most memorable was definitely the 5K I did in December, we're run by Phil. And also, like, Port Marnock 5K, run on the sand, who cares about times, and you get an ice cream after. I think that's my favourite race
I
in
love
the
it.
World.
Yeah, it's fab.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Who cares about times? You finish at the end and you get an ice cream. I mean, what's a better race?
You weren't
than
there
that?
Last year, though. You missed it last year.
I was injured, so I'll be back this year.
So talk me through a typical training week for you. How many Ks would you typically run?
So I'm doing Dwayne's plan at the moment for Garristown. So I'm training for 10K, and Dwayne has just been great with advice and helped me out with my training. So I do about 50K a week at the moment. So I do 10K or 45 minutes on a Monday. I do strength and conditioning, which has been just a game changer in my run, on a Monday evening. Speed session on Tuesday.
Is that with Pat and the crew?
With Pat
and the OTC?
Yeah, amazing. Like, shout out to Pat and the crew. It's just that has just been amazing. I love it. I do a speed session on Tuesday. I might do a little bit of strength and conditioning on a Wednesday, but it's my rest day. And then Thursday I do either speed or tempo. I mix it up, and I think that's what I learned. Just mix it up. You don't need to really follow a plan hard. A plan is just a guide. Just mix it up between sessions. Friday I do my long run, easy. I'm up to 16K at the moment. In the summer I'll drop that right down to 10 then, if I want to go back to track, which I do. So that'll go down to 10K.
So about 50K a week at the moment.
I might drop to 30, 35 in the summer. And then on Sunday I do hills. Ardkillen Hills, the best hills in the world.
Of course. Just following on, is that your favourite place to train?
Oh, yes. Oh, most beautiful place. And it's just, we're so lucky to have that at our fingertips. And I mean, hills are about a strength session. You can run easy hills. You can run repeats on the hill, short repeats, long repeats. And it's just such a nice place to run. We're so lucky. And I do the sessions there most Sundays. I try to give the coaches a break and take on those sessions. And I absolutely love it. It's just strength and conditioning and a repeat session in one.
Lovely, yeah. Any race superstitions?
No.
Not the same socks or same shorts or nothing like that?
No.
Okay. And favourite post-race reward?
Well, after my Rahini story for having tea and chocolate before the race, I now have that after the race.
Yeah.
Probably, like, if I get a PB, it'd definitely be like dinner and drinks. And I don't know, just drinks if it's red wine, gin and tonic if it's just a normal race. Why not? Enjoy yourself.
Lovely. So what's on the calendar for the rest of 2024? Any running goals for the coming year?
Everyone keeps asking me, what's my target race? I mean, it's the question. Like everyone's like,
you're
trying to
say business.
Don't stress. I'm not stressed anymore. I had that potion.
What's coming up, though, or what are you thinking of?
I have no target race because I just want to enjoy running, and that's what I do at the moment. So I'm training for Garristown. We're all doing Garristown. Are we? Are you doing Garristown?
I think so.
I mean, it's not a PB route, but it's some fun club day out. Like to break the 20 barrier again, but without putting myself under pressure, I should probably go out and try it. And I want to do the graded meetings and get an 800 meter PB. I'd love that this year. But otherwise,
would you do 400?
400 easy blocks. I need to practice how to use the blocks. I wouldn't be good. I wouldn't know how, but I'd be open to doing 400. Yeah.
Okay, Emma, I think that's pretty much it. Listen, thanks very much for coming in. It's
You're
been an
welcome.
Absolute pleasure. And best of luck with your running goals and with the track and field for the rest of the year.
Okay, and just to say that track sessions are happening on the from April 8 up in Alsa. And if anyone wants to join track and field or join any sessions, I will after Garstown put them on all the groups. So speed sessions happen every Tuesday and Thursday in the hub. And they're so much fun. And Argyll and Hills every Sunday at 10:30 up in the far left field.
Lovely. Everyone take notes. Stick them in your diary. Okay, cheers. Thanks very much, Emma. Great.
Thank you as always for tuning in. We really appreciate your support and hope you enjoyed the show. I'd like to thank our guests, Ina Reardon and Emma Shumashinska. I'd like to finish by thanking the Lusk AC podcast team, Colin Brown, Julie Griffith, Nicole Hodson, Dwayne Moore, Sean Smith and Colin Wall. All the best from Lusk AC.